Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome to Women's Voices.
The crystal drum sounds, the crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins, the sacred war begins. Crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins. The sacred war begins. Crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins. The sacred war begins. The crystal drum sounds,
the crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins, the sacred war begins. The sacred drum sounds,
the sacred war begins,
the sacred war begins.
The sacred drum sounds,
the sacred crystal drum sounds, the sacred war begins, the sacred war begins, the sacred war begins, the sacred war begins.
Okay, we've been listening to my song, The Crystal Drum Sounds, The Sacred War Begins. My guest this evening is Mary Beth Brangen, who with her partner, James Heddle, co-direct EON, the Ecological Options Network, nonprofit media service for progressive organizations and campaigns. They are doing very exciting work, having just returned from a conference in D.C. on wireless safety issues, followed by lobbying for those issues, as well as radiation testing of our food, water, soil, and milk. And just days ago, returned from the three-day public conference and strategy meeting on the great emerging issues of the Asia-Pacific region and their effects on island nations of the Pacific and countries of the Pacific Rim. At the same time, the big APEC meeting was going on, the one Obama attended. But before I introduce my guest, I would like to share some of my recent thoughts. I want to say something about gratitude in this time of Thanksgiving and how much gratitude I feel for all the beings who touch my life, family and friends and more. And gratitude for our wonderful community and appreciation for the beauty of our world. And I'm touched by the love we all feel for each other and for the planet. And I'm grateful for this time of profound shift in our world, and I trust the process we are all a part of, in spite of how it looks. We live in a rushed and chaotic time here and around the world, with scenes of violence in our familiar streets and parks, in cities we know well or live in, scenes that surely look like something out of Nazi Germany, lines of policemen dressed as if they came out of a violent video game, all in black, faces hidden behind clear shields and helmets, high-top boots, carrying rifle-looking weapons and batons, menacing, injuring, two or three of them capturing an unarmed, peaceful victim and pounding, hitting, spraying. These are becoming everyday scenes to us. It gives me to wonder, aren't these policemen part of the community? They're not the army. They haven't come in from outside, have they? How have they been so propagandized? Many of them clearly are very identified with their role, obviously easily propagandized into violence against their own. Some have just come back from war, of course, and are spreading their specialized brand of military violence into community life. This is happening everywhere, the militarization of all life, the invasive and nonsensical body searches that disrespect the personhood of their victims, folks who fly, the insistence of forcing invasive toxins and pathogens into the bodies of helpless children and their protesting parents, vaccinations. Anyway, as I pondered on the scene of former poet laureate of California, 71-year-old Robert Moss and his wife being struck down and clubbed by the UCB police on the Berkeley campus, it suggests to me that the water is beginning to boil in this heating pot we find ourselves in. We all know about the frog in the pot. If you turn the heat up rather slowly, the frog won't notice. And by the time he does, it's too late. He can't get out. It has occurred to me that these guys, out of touch with anything except their love of power over and violence, could be ordered to shoot at us, and they would. I think we have a problem, a real problem. Surrounded by organic farms in West Marin, California, Mary Beth Brangen and James Heddle co-direct Eon. Mary Beth and Jim have been partners in life and work for over 25 years. Their videos have been broadcast internationally on PBS, Link TV, and Free Speech TV, and screened in the U.S. Congress, many parliaments, and at the UN, as well as used by activists worldwide. The couple produced 15 documentaries and over 100 YouTube posts of courageous and creative responses from across the world to injustice, greed, and violence. These stories of people's movements are examples of what they call deep democracy and a new worldview they've dubbed the planetary paradigm. Eon collaborations include the International Nuclear Free Zone, stopping electromagnetic pollution from wireless technologies, stopping proposed radioactive waste dumps in California and Texas, as well as California's community choice energy, the election protection, and the Stop the Pesticide Spray campaigns. Welcome to Women's Voices, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you. I just want to add that introduction from our what you have just read is a little old now. I think that was a couple of years ago that we put that on our website, and I just wanted to say we have now well over 300 YouTube entries on our YouTube channel, and urge everybody to visit that. To see the voices and the actions of the valiant movements of citizens all around the country and the world.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it very much, Mary Beth. The first question I asked my guests, given that this is Women's Voices, is what part did your mother play in your becoming the woman that you are today?
When I look back, I just appreciating. My mother died about 5 years ago, and we had a wonderful ceremony around her while she was in her last days, and all of us children took turns telling her what the influence was that she had had on us in our life.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we anointed her with a little oil, special oils, you know, it was very sweet. And I'm so glad we all got a chance to do that. And now my mother was a nurse, and she taught me about service to the family, first of all, and then to all the other loved ones surrounding her. And she was the go-to person in the neighborhood when some calamity happened, and I was so proud of her for that, her competence and her her skills and being able to help people, and her joyfulness and bright spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so competent with running a household of five, and then a sixth child came when we were all older, she just kept it all going so well. I used to say, I can't hear myself think, but she, with all of us, you know, but she was really a great manager, and and it was her level-headedness under emergency situations that I also appreciated so much, and I feel like that's what I'm being called on to do too, as we all are in the this totally tumultuous time that we've chosen to be born into.
Isn't that true? Could you talk a little bit about your growing up years and how you moved into what you are doing at this time?
Well, I was mostly spiritually oriented as a kid, and wanted to understand the world and why it was the way it was, and I went to girls' schools until I realized they were, the separation of the women from the men was not really what I wanted. It was in high school and college I did that. And then I got married at a very young age and had two beautiful daughters and did the whole thing about, you know, we lived my parents' values and had the big, beautiful home on acreage and out in the country. And our family was known as, with our friends, as one of the happiest and the best adjusted and so on and so forth. But then I just knew that if I didn't step out of that bubble of the middle America, a corporate wife situation, I would die. I knew it. So I thought long and hard and struggled with it for 2 years, and then finally, and my kids, my daughters were only like 11 and 13, and yet I just had to go then. I knew, and I was getting messages, internal messages, you must leave. And I didn't know to what. So fortunately, through a friend at work, which was Dow Chemical, which is where my former husband had worked for years, and I, during this time, this tumultuous time, decided, well, I needed to get a job, and so I went there and worked as a receptionist at the executive headquarters, and then in the education department. And I had a friend who had lightning strike close to him 7 times in a row.
Oh my gosh.
And it had electrified his whole system, and he was a chemical engineer, middle management. And during this time, we had a lot of friends at Dow. We were we played tennis and bridge with the top management there, because my former husband was quite a tennis player. And then this friend that I met there, who had had an expansion of consciousness experience after having that lightning strike close to him seven times in a row, sort of over about 6 months.
Wow.
He went to his Dow Chemical bosses and said, I have to take a leave or quit my job and write about what I've just realized from my experience of expanding my consciousness. And so his boss, who was a friend of mine too, said, don't leave. Write your book and become the liaison between Tao and the innovative thinkers in the world. And so that's what he did. And his book was about how technology could serve as a seed pod to save people from unexpected calamities. That was back in the late 70s, and the kind of calamities he was thinking about was like meteorites hitting the planet and wiping out the dinosaurs, and maybe something like that would happen again. And that, anyway, so then he and I became friends, and he wanted me to travel with him and for him in behalf of Tao. And so I did that for a while and met a futurist and an author, Barbara Marks Hubbard. And we became really good friends, and she wanted me to travel with her then because it was easier for her to write and speak back then when she was with me. So then I was exposed to really innovative thinking, and I appreciated that so much, coming out of the bubble that I had been in. It was more like a marshmallow. That is what I felt like it was.
What a wonderful experience. I mean, just laid out on the platter for you, it almost seems like.
Oh, I was very blessed, although I went through 2 years of torment before I pulled myself away, and then finally said I was taking a year's sabbatical, and because I had been raised Catholic and divorce wasn't in my mind, I couldn't just conceive of it. So then I went to Barbara's, who had a place in D.C. Her sister is Patricia Ellsberg, wife of Daniel Ellsberg, and Barbara had a beautiful place there that was sort of a salon for people coming from all over the world to join her in these discussions, and she would invite them to dinners, and so as they came to do business in Washington, D.C. So when I went there, her partner had just died, and she needed support, and so she asked me to please help her. And so I ended up staying there for a year, and managing that wonderful place called Greystone, and organizing dinners and salons where people would meet and talk. And I met people, intellectual leaders and political people from all over the world who were coming through there, and keep in touch with some of them still. After a while, I felt like that was, it was just Eliza Doolittle and My Fair Lady, you know. Words, words, words. I'm so sick of words. I wanted to get out into the world and get shit on my boots and roll up my sleeves and put my shoulder to the wheel and all those idioms. And I was actually thinking that and saying that one day. And that night, I met Jim. He came to dinner.
My goodness.
Yes. And so Jim had, at that time, started a wonderful nonprofit called the Positive Futures Center, and was a professor in Seattle at Antioch University, and was the head of the graduate psychiatry department. But then he also felt the call to not just talk about things, but do. And so he had become aware of the horrendous threat of nuclear weapons, and I had resigned from the university to make a film about the world's first country to develop and to write a nuclear-free constitution and green constitution and indigenous rights honoring constitution. And that was the small island nation of Palau in Micronesia. So when he came to dinner that night in Washington, D.C., when I first met him, he was working on that film and doing interviews with the State Department about this whole situation, because the State Department of the United States, the Interior Department, and Defense Department, did not want Palau to have the right to do that, and because if one country got away with it, as they put it, everyone would want to get away with becoming nuclear free,
and
they couldn't have that. So I fell in love with Jim and the concept of using media for social change at the same time, and we worked on that film, and that I was just learning about it, filmmaking, of course. But that film became an award-winning film that was broadcast nationally on PBS and then internationally in many, many other countries, and was put into libraries also all over the world.
How exciting. Yeah.
That's where we began, and that was about 30 years ago now. Yeah. So in that time since, through blessedly being partners, we've had many adventures in finding what the need was in our environment that we could make a contribution to, and then supporting the other people who were working on whatever it was. So at first we worked on defending Palau's right. We would go between the Congress and the UN and the Trusteeship Council, because Palau was what was called a trust territory of the United States that they won from Japan after the war. So we would go between Palau and the UN and Congress back and forth. Jim had become also a psychotherapist, and we were consciously using family therapy techniques in this arena, this international arena, to see if we could, by increasing communication and transparency, what we could do to help.
Yeah, affect a difference.
Yeah, I think it did. It as a consequence, you'll be happy to know that Palau is a matrilineal culture. A matrilineal culture, and the women chose the chiefs, and they could remove them, and they were the strongest force fighting for justice for their country through those 10 years of forced elections, and then we got into that issue years later in working with vote fraud here and discovering how our electoral system was being manipulated, just as the Palauans' electoral system was manipulated. Although those many years ago, they were illegitimately forced out of their nuclear-free clause. They reversed it illegitimately, I mean in a totally fraudulent way, because the people never changed their mind. So we did a follow-up documentary to that. We produced many, many pieces on that issue during that 10 years. But we also, and then at the end of the 10 years in 1994, we produced another documentary that sort of recapped all of that. And just when we were in Hawaii this last couple of weeks, just returned last night, we ran into a Palauan there who told us, "Oh, I know that film," and also someone else who was teaching at the University of Hawaii, who uses it for teaching about colonialism. So it was very satisfying to get that kind of information, and
absolutely.
And we also were able, together with the other people that we were working with, around the world in Greenpeace and the American Friends Service Committee and in the World Council of Churches, for instance, and some Danish labor union organizations, we were able to hold off the pressure, this immense pressure from the United States against this tiny little island nation who was only, 15,000 people, because they wanted to make it into a military base at that time. And so by delaying and making this an issue, the group of us who worked on that were able to prevent that military base from being built there and destroying that sensitive coral reef and the abundant underwater sea life that was found there. In fact, they're known as the world's best place to scuba dive and have the most dense number of underwater species found anywhere in the world. And a lot of spawning takes place there. So it was, you know, not only a social win, but or a political win, but an environmental win. And that's what we have found in all of the issues that we've worked on, that if you are protecting the environment or the social justice of the area or the political, I mean, it all is a piece.
Mm-hmm. What you're speaking about right now, is this what just happened, that you were able to prevent them from...
That was in 1994,
okay.
And we stopped that project.
Yeah. You just came back from...
We just came back from Hawaii, turning our attention back to the Asia-Pacific region after focusing elsewhere for those intervening years, because the United States, like a lumbering giant, is turning its attention back to the Asia-Pacific region. In the interim, had been focusing... Pardon me?
Can I hold off for 1 second? I want to introduce you again. We're listening to Mary Beth Brangen. She and her partner, James Heddle, co-direct EON, the Ecological Options Network. And by the way, that website, your website is www.eon3.net.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it's the number 3.
Yes.
Thanks, Janie.
Yes.
What we were doing was to document on video the conference that was in contrast to the APEC, the Asia-Pacific Economic Commission meeting, which was being held in Honolulu November 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th. And leaders and top CEOs from throughout the Pacific, 2,000 of them, came to Honolulu for a series of talks and meetings. Well, President Obama was there, and he wanted to talk to the leaders a lot about the military concerns in the Pacific. But what's going on, really, is that trade talks under the so-called cover of trade talks, like NAFTA and CAFTA, they were trying to push for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, TPPA. And what those kinds of trade talks do is to set up situations where the bigger industrialized countries can suck the resources out of little countries and do it despite any laws that might be in those nations. They contend that their trade rules trump all environmental laws and all social laws, any justice laws. All of that is trumped by these people, these unelected economic leaders foisting their trade rules on countries. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is wanting more and more resources, and they're turning their attention, the U.S. Foreign policy is turning its attention from the Middle East now to the Asia Pacific.
Oh, God.
See, they want full spectrum dominance,
yes,
from the space to the ocean, and they want the full planetary dominance.
Yeah.
And so this is what they're doing.
Yeah.
So we wanted to even up the sides. You know, so there's a wonderful conference called the Moana Nui Conference, which means big ocean. And it was co-organized by the Native Hawaiian activists, who are quite wonderfully fierce, and other Asian Pacific activists from other countries, like the Philippines, and other island nations, and with our friends from the International Forum on Globalization that's based right here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm.
And so we've worked with a lot of these activists before throughout the years, from the Philippines and from other island nations, and also with the International Forum on Globalization.
Mm.
And so we're just so honored to be part of the efforts to stop that ongoing colonization,
yeah,
and resource extraction,
really,
for transnational corporations.
Yes, what a movement that is, and thank God you're there. At least we're getting to see what is happening. You know, I'm concerned about time. We have less than 30 minutes, and I know you went to a conference in D.C. on wireless issues and radiation and what is it raining and nuclear reactors. We have a lot on our plate, so I'll let you pick out what.
Well, I'll start with the Wireless Safety Summit. This is an issue that we've been following because we started with nuclear radiation. We just moved down the spectrum a little into radio frequency radiation and found, because of all the explosion of wireless technologies, beginning with cell phones and then, beginning with radar actually, and then cell phones and the exposure from cell towers. And we did a documentary called Public Exposure, DNA, Democracy, and the Wireless Revolution. And that was done 11 years ago, and it's still current with the information that it has in it, and it's used all over the world. So, and people can get that on our YouTube channel, can watch it for free. And any of the things on the YouTube channel can also be ordered in DVD form for people to use in meetings if they would like to.
How do they find this YouTube channel?
It's youtube.com/eon3.
Okay.
EON and then the number 3.
Okay. And can you get there, can you get there from your website too?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can get there from the website.
All right. So what is it raining? Is it raining down cesium, did you say?
The radioactive particles from Fukushima are being brought over in the rain, are being brought over in the jet stream, and then getting rained. Wherever the rain comes down, you'll have it washed out of the jet stream. So after Fukushima had all of its explosions, not only of the reactors, but the fuel pools holding much more radiation than just a single reactor. I mean, the cover-up on this is just astronomical.
Mm.
I mean, there's still articles coming out saying that this was just a fraction of what Chernobyl released. I'm sorry, but there were 3 reactors that melted down, not just one, as in Chernobyl. 3 reactors melted down, melted through, which means they went through the base of their containment vessel. They melted through that and are now on their way through the Earth. Plus, on top of those 3, the fuel pools holding the fuel that had been taken out of the reactor cores because it gets too highly irradiated to use. And then it has to be cooled and kept in storage. And those were damaged and were held above the reactors. So in those reactors that exploded, those fuel pools also were affected and in the ones that didn't explode, they, without cooling, without water, to keep them constantly cooled, the water boiled away that was in the pool, and then fires started in the cladding, the zirconium cladding on that holds the radioactive pellets of uranium that's so highly intensely radioactive. And that catches on fire when it's in contact with the air. And so we've been exposed to so much radiation, and it's continuing. There is no way to stop it at this point. Mm-hmm. Chernobyl, 25 years ago, is still also in meltdown.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Fukushima disaster has been a testament to how well the public can be kept in the dark and confused about all of these issues by the major media and by the powerful nuclear industry, who got together right after that happened to make sure that the media would not report on it and that there would be a blackout.
Wow. Well, it's worked very well. You know, you were talking about why they're pushing for more nuclear reactors, and it's not exactly what meets the eye. It's not just so we'll be able to provide energy, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, the nuclear reactors for nuclear power is the flip side of the coin from nuclear weapons. They want the plutonium to continue to be produced so that they can use it in weapons. And what and then, of course, it's very, very costly to build these. And the utilities, because they're monopolies, are have arrangements so that anything, any infrastructure that they build, they get the cost covered plus a percentage of profit. And so this is a cost-plus contract that you wouldn't believe. I mean, they go billions of dollars over budget every time they're built. So you're looking at quite a profitable enterprise for the nuclear industry, as well as the nuclear weapons manufacturers.
You spoke of them as the thugs at the top.
Yes, I think that they are criminal. They're thugs. The workers are not protected. The real data is still being obfuscated about the reality of the science of the damage that's being done. There are studies that have been done around every reactor. I mean, in the normal routine operation of every power reactor, nuclear power reactor, there has to be steam released and water, billions of gallons of water a day is used to cool it. So that water is released back into the environment, into the river or the ocean. They're always built next to a body of water or a lake.
And then it's
20 degrees hotter, and then with trace amounts of radiation in it. And the finally, the Germans, I mean, Dr. Ernest Sternglass in the United States and others have done studies proving that the infant mortality is higher downwind in the immediate vicinity of normally operating reactor without any accidents involved. They leak tritium all the time. Tritium is tritiated water. It's hydrogen, an H3O instead of H2O. It's H3O, and it's water can get. It just flows everywhere. You cannot stop it. Anyway, there's loads of data, loads of science, and because of the vast PR efforts and the money that they can spend, the industry can spend to block all this information. People don't know this, even though
horrible.
It's there.
It's horrible. You also wanted to talk about smart meters, the incineration of nuclear waste in Japan.
The smart meters are an absolute disaster. The so-called smart meters, because they are being used wirelessly. The utilities have discovered that they're less expensive than using a wired version. And so the utilities all over the world are being pushed by industry, by the transnational corporations that stand to benefit from producing these things, to do this, and in the name of supposedly upgrading the electrical grid and to make the information about electricity usage in your home available to the consumer. But that's all a greenwashing hogwash, because what in reality happens is it's measuring in a different way, and it can be, what it will do is pick up the initial motor surge from each device that when you turn on, it has to do that. Well, the old analog meters didn't. They pick that surge up. They would just measure the average. And because of that, for one thing, almost everyone's bill will go up and has gone up and in different areas gone up astronomically, like 3 and 4 times. Vacant homes will actually see a surge. that's been a complaint. People have noticed that too. It's a way for a big, it's like a gold rush mentality. Oh, let's put these on. It's a very poorly thought out plan, because then what they are trying to do is make it work through a mesh network, and that means that they bounce signals from one home to the other home. These PG&E anyway is using a model of meter that, because of part of PG&E's terrain being in hills and mountains, is very powerful and will go a mile at least. So what's happening is these powerful, sharp, millisecond bursts of radiation is emitted from these meters thousands of times a day, almost continuously, because they're in this mesh network and they're what's called chirping to each other and making sure, hey, you over there? Yes, I'm over here. You over there? Yep, I'm over here. And so not only to transmit the data about the electricity, but for all of those other reasons. And people are getting so sick. They are being injured. People, first of all, who've already been chemically sensitized by overexposure, or other people who've become sensitive already to electrochemical radiation because of overexposure, but also people who are just healthy have become ill and have had to leave their homes because of these meters. And then there's they have to sleep in their cars, or it's just horrendous. So there's quite a movement starting throughout California and also around the world to block this. And people should really go to our blog, which is EON3EMF blog, EMF as in frequency, electromagnetic frequency blog.net. So that's EON3EMF blog.net. And we've got loads of information on that subject, and also links to other organizations in our really great network of people who are working on that, stopsmartmeters.org, emfsafetynetwork.org, and others. And also, we alternate on that blog with nuclear issues. So you can also get more information about nuclear issues, which are really up now because of Fukushima, and there is a new movement to shut down California's nuclear reactors, because our nuclear reactors are right on earthquake faults and within feet of the oceans in tsunami zones. One in Diablo Canyon in San Luis Obispo, and the other one in San Clemente called San Onofre. Both of those are disasters waiting to happen. There would be no possibility to evacuate people in enough time to avoid a horrendous disaster if something were to happen. And so we've really got to face the reality that we're being constantly exposed to radioactive particles from the Fukushima ongoing disaster, and we've got to stop our own nuclear reactors here in the United States and all around the world and put them into storage and then watch and contain and store that radioactive waste for the amount of time that it's hazardous, which is millions of years. So we've got to get on this, folks. So that's my... those are the things that are real. We need to become informed about these issues and not be fooled by the media blackout. Also, we joined with Fukushima mothers and other mothers throughout Japan who are working really hard to stop the incineration of the radioactive debris, because there's millions of tons of it, and the Japanese culture is a very collective consciousness, and they think that they are pushing the distribution of this millions of tons of rubble and incineration in even uncontaminated, formerly uncontaminated areas of Japan to, quote-unquote, share the pain. Isn't that just obscene?
And well, it is. Go ahead.
Chris Busby from Europe, just let me, has put it, he believes that this is really so that the obvious cancers that will be... would be seen from the exposure. They're closest in to the reactors right now, and then other hot spots because of rain and wind direction after the explosions, that those people will not then be able to validly claim compensation from the government or from TEPCO, because there won't be any baseline that will be different from them, because all of the people will be getting sick. That's what he thinks is underlying that motive. But it is also a cultural thing that they believe everybody has to share the pain. I know it's just so. We went to the consulate here in San Francisco, the Japanese consulate, and it took him nearly 7,000 signatures of women and people from all over the world who. Pleading with the Japanese government not to do that, and also, you know, putting the incineration fumes into the jet stream of millions of tons of this radioactive rubble, and then also they're going to put the ash along with all the other radiated water into the ocean. It's insane. These people are totally insane. Those who are making decisions about radiation right now, they do not know what they're doing. Or if they do, it's just impossibly insane. So we need to get aware of this, and people of the world, please go to the website of the people that are trying to stop that, which is OneWorldNoNukes.org. It's O-N-E, OneWorldNoNukes.org. And then and join in through our blog. We'll have other organizations that people can get connected to. And also, you know, don't be afraid to stand up for your rights and refuse to have so-called smart meter on your house. Let me get back to that real quick. I know we only have 4 minutes left or something, but people have to know that the World Health Organization, which is usually very industry-friendly,
yes,
and has a subset that makes pronouncements about cancer, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, just came out with a classification of radio frequency radiation as a class 2B carcinogen, which is a possible carcinogen. But they weren't looking at all the data. If they looked at all the data, they would have said it would be a probable carcinogen. But anyway, even as a possible carcinogen, the fact that a utility would say to you that you must put a possible carcinogen on your home has got to be resisted. This is insane. Again, this is nuts. And a lot of people, what they're doing is the utility has put it on their home. What they do is call in an electrician, buy an analog meter, the old kind of meter, and have the electrician swap the meter out. And what can they say? What can they do? They can't call that tampering, because the legal definition of tampering with a meter is to deliberately not pay the bill that you owe the utility company. Now, this is your right, folks, to not be irradiated by either nuclear reactors, bombs, or
really
so-called smart meters. So we just have to band together on this.
Well, we certainly do. It's quite amazing that we have to do these things, that we aren't protected, but quite the opposite.
Actually, we're, I think, being called upon to wake up, to get very protective of our environment and our loved ones and all the creatures of the planet, and to say that it's no longer going to be allowed, these things that are so life-threatening and so killing of the DNA, the very genetic structure of our planet. We have to stand up. We have to wake up and spiritually approach this.
Yes.
And that's why I think I tell myself, well, this is a good spiritual wake-up. And we just...
Yes. You know, we have to leave. Our time is running out. Thank you so much, Mary Beth. This is indeed our opportunity to rise to the call and change our world. Thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you, Janie.
Yes, and good night.
Good night.